Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to another edition of Let's Talk TV Live. My name is Barbara Barnett. I'm executive editor of Blog Critics Magazine and the author of Chasing Zebras, The Unofficial Guide to House MD, among other stuff. And I am joined tonight by Jimmy. How are you tonight?
I'm fine. How are you?
Cold. Very cold. and you can find at Jerome Wetzel TV, which is his pseudonym, at the Twitter tag at Jerome Wetzel TV, all one word.
Mm-hmm.
The TV is capitalized. Yeah, it's, gosh, I can't, you know, I sound like a broken record. It is 7 degrees in Chicago, going down to a low of, I have no idea, but it's going to be cold. And I, tomorrow, boy, I'll tell you, I had a coffee meeting at Starbucks scheduled for 10 o'clock, and my person I was going to be meeting, she's a sci-fi genre PR person, emailed me, and she says, hey, can we make this for Thursday? It's just too freaking cold. It's like, okay, that's fine. We could do that. We could do Thursday. But tomorrow night, I have to venture downtown. I have a speaking engagement at the Independent Writers of Chicago talking about blogging. So that's kind of fun. Yeah. The state of blogging for writers and how writers can use blogs, their own blogs like Blog Critics or Examiner or whatever, to sort of further their careers and stuff like that. So it's kind of part of my other sort of meta life is talking about blogging and writing on the internet as opposed to just doing it and talking about entertainment, which is what I really love to talk about. So, boy, there's a lot going on. I just love it when it's like funny because I always watched like one or two shows, and now all of a sudden I'm watching like five or six every week, and it's like all consuming. It's crazy, crazy. Like, oh, you're laughing because you watch about 25.
Five or six is all consuming, huh?
Huh?
Because it's so all consuming, and five or six is all consuming.
Well, that's in addition to everything else that I do.
Oh, okay.
So that's in addition to running a magazine and speaking engagements and doing a little teaching hither and yon and writing novels and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's pretty all-consuming. And I actually write about some of them, too. I've been doing a lot of writing. Today I did a conference call. Sci-Fi did a conference call one of the executive producers of Helix, and Jerry Ryan, who is going to be having a story arc on Helix starting this Friday night. And Helix, for those of you who do not know, airs on Sci-Fi on Friday nights. And you just got caught up on the show, yes?
I actually not only got caught up tonight, I watched Friday's episode with Jerry Ryan as well.
Which I do not have, and that's going to be remedied because I talked to the PR folks from Sci-Fi that sponsored the call, and I've done a lot of conference calls with them, and I hung out at Comic-Con with Sci-Fi, and I get press releases from them on a daily basis. And it occurred to me that I'm not getting screeners because people were on the call and they'd already seen it, like you had. And so I said to him, hey, you know, it seems like everybody's got screeners but me. What's going on? And do you just not have my address? And it looks like that's just the problem. And so hopefully I'll get on that and I'll get the screeners and stuff from it. So, so let's talk about Helix for this segment.
Okay.
So what are your thoughts now that you're caught up and in even seeing the next episode, which you have the advantage of me because I have not seen it?
I'm still in that cautious optimism thing. I like it, but I don't love it. Like, I don't have a a burning desire to watch it as soon as it airs or anything.
So I think
Jerry Ryan plays a really interesting character that kind of shakes some things up.
Yes.
That may make the back half of the season a little more exciting than the front half.
Right. I mean, the first half of the season has been sort of a, you know, a submarine drama and you know, like a closed kind of claustrophobic idea because they're at this, the premise is their CDC is called in and Billy Campbell plays Alan, who is the kind of one of the lead scientist guys at CDC. And Center for Disease Control. He's a infectious diseases guy, and he and his team are called to the Arctic Circle, where there is a research facility that is run by a guy named Dr. Hitaki. And they come down there, and there is this really nasty virus that's going around. And when I say nasty virus, I don't mean like an upper respiratory infection or a cold or the flu. I'm talking about something that makes it's like, okay, the way that I describe it to people is it's like the rage disease in 28 days later and 28 weeks later. So people, you know, get this and they're not, you know, people said that, you know, people would say that 28 days later, the infected, as they're called, are zombies, but they're incredibly fast-moving zombies. And I would say that that's probably a good, accurate description of these guys, except,
I mean, they're not zombies because they're not dead, but...
They're not dead.
You're right, but they act like a lot like those zombies in that movie.
That's sort of rage disease, that sort of rage sickness. That was in 28 Days Later, and they have black blood. Their blood is black, just like in the X-Files, which is interesting because one of the executive producers of Helix is Tim Maida, who was one of the writers and producers on the X-Files in its later days. I think he was a story editor maybe starting season six-ish, at season six or season seven, going on through that. And I actually had a chance to talk with him. One of the things I love about sci-fi's press conferences is unlike other networks, you don't get one question and then you have to go away and get back in line. You can actually do sort of a la Comic-Con. You can actually sit and do, although... Comic-Con, you have to share the spotlight with several other writers. You could actually sit and talk for like 5 or 6 minutes with the people on the line yourself, which is really nice. I did like a 5 or 6 minute interview with Tomata, who I would love to have on the show. I have to get back in contact with the Helix folks and see if I can get them on the show because we had a really interesting conversation about the difference, you know, how genre TV has changed since the 90s during the heyday of the X-Files to now. And, you know, how it's really become so much more mainstream, which is kind of one of the things I like to talk about with writers. But I asked him, I said, so Hitaki, who's getting back to kind of talking about the show, so there's this horrible virus, and I'll get to what I spoke to him about. And it has basically, one of the scientists that's up there that's affected is Alan's brother. So he's very, you know, he's up there and he's trying to figure out with his team what's going on. And there are these weird hairless rats and monkeys that are, it's like really weird. You have to see it. But some of the other characters, were you as surprised as I that, you know, like they really kind of killed off they're very casual about killing off characters.
Well, they've only killed off one major character so far, right?
Dory.
Just the one doctor.
I really liked her. I was really sad.
I know. I honestly, that's been my problem with this show is I don't find the characters all that interesting. I like the story. I like the premise. But Billy Campbell is kind of ridiculous sometimes. And I've just had trouble connecting. And she had personality. I liked her.
She did.
I
love the chemistry between her and Biaseros.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was and you know, when he killed her, I mean, he murdered her.
Right. Right. I mean, that was surprising, but it was a good, really good twist. I mean, as sad as I was to lose her, I really thought that was, it played
out
interestingly.
And I really thought, I mean, he's actually quite a good actor, and I'm like blanking on his name because there's so many characters in the show.
I can tell you, give me 1 second here.
Oh, I'm looking too.
He is played by Mark Ganymede?
Let's see if we can get a better pronunciation of his name.
Okay. Yeah, I always mispronounce everything. So.
Yeah. Let's see how we pronounce his name. Characters on. So this is why the internet is so good. Actors. Okay. Cast. Aha. Here we go. So I really like, as much of a jerk as he is, I really like Major Biaseros, who has a really hard name to pronounce. And he is played by Mark Ganymede, who is I think that's how you pronounce his name.
Verizon
Innovators could be
air and soil sensor network.
That's really bad. I went up to Sci-Fi Station and they started playing a Verizon commercial. This show is not brought to you by Verizon. Anyway, so he's quite good. And when he killed her, you could really see that it was hard for him to do. Mm-hmm. And he's a pretty cold-blooded, ruthless guy. I mean, you get the impression he doesn't mind killing anybody. And I also love the twist that he appeared to be dead, but he didn't die. And So what do you mean?
Well, now he's off learning some secrets that when he returns could really change not only the direction of his character, but the show itself.
Yeah. And, you know, you almost don't know where the good guys are going to be and where the bad guys are going to be. And I'm wondering, you know, too, and by the way, the guy, the actor who plays, Dr. Hitachi is also excellent.
I didn't do much with him the first few weeks. But now, this week's episode especially, they give you some moments with him that you're like, oh, I really am intrigued by him and what his motivations are, and maybe there's a little more to him than what it appeared.
Well, one of the things that I asked Tomeda was, I noticed in a couple of episodes ago, he was injured. You know, he injured himself. He basically ran a sword through his back.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things that happened was he healed, but he healed really, really quickly. And I was intrigued by that because, as you know, Jimmy, my novel that is finished and hopefully it'll be sold, very much is concerned with a person who has incredible wound regeneration. So I did a lot of research on it, and I was wondering, you know, it was a really subtle moment. It was a really quick moment, and nobody made anything of it. Gee, you heal really quickly. Yes, I do. And then it was dropped. So one of the things I asked the executive producer was, okay, so are we going to see more of that? Is that something that is a big clue into Hitachi and his motivations? And then I listened to Ron DeMore talk about the show as well.
Mm-hmm.
He had said that what's being worked on, the drug, I mean, Illyria, which is the name of the corporation that's sponsoring the research, is basically what they're working on down there is something that can either change the way people live entirely or kill them. And
mm-hmm.
which, again, is a theme of my novel. It's very odd. It's like very odd. So I said to him, I said, so, and I didn't mention that I had written anything about this, but I said, so are we talking about something to do with telomeres? And are, you know, and you're obviously, this is very genetic. You've got a virus that now we've discovered is a delivery system to deliver something to the chromosomes, to something to the genes.
Mm-hmm.
And so he says, well, we did a lot of research on telomeres and what they do and what they're for. And I'm like, aha, they're on to the secret of immortality or aging or something along those lines. They have to be. They have to be, because that's what telomeres lead to. Telomeres, for those of you who are not scientifically inclined, are the little, if you think of shoelaces, and you know the little plastic end cap things that keep shoelaces from fraying, because when they fall off, your shoelaces fray and you can't put them through the holes?
Mm-hmm.
That's what telomeres do. They're end caps on the ends of chromosomes, and they age and they fray. And as they fray and they age, the chromosomes, the actual cell ages and dies. And that's what happens. But if you can find a way to stop that aging or to protect the telomeres, then
mm-hmm.
Then you have endless ageless cells. So that's one theory of aging. And if he's got,
I think they're going to kind of keep things close to their vest for a while. But there are scenes in this week's episode where it's actually discussed what's going on at the base and why.
Okay. Interesting.
So they are going to start to put. Well, I think that's part of why they're bringing Jerry Ryan in, because she's the head of this parent company.
Yes, right. So she's going to come in. She's really going to shake things up, because Hitachi is kind of off on his own agenda.
Yeah, yeah. And so she's lost her faith in him. And so
Right. She's
coming to get the layout on the ground and figure out where her product is that she's expecting. And
right. So I think, and it was sort of intimated during the press conference, that
mm-hmm.
you might see Hitachi and Alan Farragut working together.
Well, Hitachi actually has a connection to another character.
Yeah,
and
well,
I think that's already been kind of dropped in the show.
Yeah,
but
he has
I think
a connection
that's going to come into play more as it goes in terms of why Hitachi might have gone off the rails and what his real motivations might be.
So this is actually, you know, I'm finding it to be pretty interesting. I'm a science geek, you know, and especially when it gets to genetics, which is what I studied at school when
mm-hmm.
I was an undergrad. One of the many things I studied when I was at college was molecular genetics. I mean, not at the graduate level, but I took some graduate level courses in it. And so, you know, Katie says super quick healing on TV shows is a pet peeve. One of the things, though, and I agree with you, Katie, if there's no explanation for it, if there's an actual biological explanation for it, then I think it's a valid path to, if they explain it, if it's part of the narrative,
mm-hmm.
which I think in this case it very much is going to be. You know, you have, I want to get to Jerry Ryan's character in just a minute, but I want to kind of finish going through the other characters. So Hitachi's sort of son,
mm-hmm.
not really his son, but his sort of his adopted puppy of a guy. He had that. Now there was a twist last week with his character. which is what Viserys discovered, was there's another one of him.
Well, a twin. It's not like a clone or anything. But
No, I know. But he's been missing. He's been missing for a long time. And there's also a Katie says, yeah, I'm talking, hand waving it. Okay, so if it's just sort of magical. I guess that's what she means. Tell me if I'm wrong. But, you know, there was also a suggestion that all of these children are missing. Right?
One of our main characters might be one of those children. Not just him, but somebody else.
Yes, right. Yes, I know. And I think the suggestion is that I've heard, should I say?
Yes, because you're just talking speculation. You haven't seen any, you can't spoil if you haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it. I'm thinking Walker is one of those children.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not sure, but I feel like that's already been.
I think that's where they're going. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
it seems fairly obvious that that's where they're going.
Yeah, I would think so. And I think that that's where they're going with it. So tell us a little bit about Friday night's episode, which I've not seen and you have. Boo-hoo.
I'll talk pretty vaguely because I don't want to spoil things.
And
I'll tell you, Jerry Ryan shows up very early in the hour. And her second scene shows a drastically different part of her personality than her first scene. So
I guess
definitely
the suggestion,
a character that's going to play.
So speaking with her this afternoon and with Tim, there's a suggestion that, you know, she's, oh, I'm here to help.
Uh-huh.
But
yeah,
she's really not.
Yeah, I think that was in the preview. And that's her first scene. If she comes in and I'm here to help you, whatever you need.
Right.
That may not be on the up and up.
Yeah. No, that's actually not so much a spoiler because she and Tim Ryan said that. So,
and the fact that 3 or 4 minutes into the episode,
you'll see that.
It's not like a big shocker at the end of the episode or anything.
Correct. Right. Yeah. So she's going to kind of shake things up. And, you know, so you have a lot of, I think there are a lot of wild cards at play. You've got her, who's going to be a really big one. And what's Viserys' connection to all of this? He works for Illyria too, but he's army. And how is the government involved in Illyria?
I think his connection in this will be answered in this episode.
I'm really glad. And then what about the woman who captured him? You know, who is she and how is she going to play into this? And, you know, and what's going to happen to Sarah, who's, you know, got her own issues. She's got cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And is there something in this medicine that they're cooking up that can cure her cancer? And can cure cancer, period. I mean, I think they've already spoken about that. Is that?
Yeah, they spoke that they had some type of cure that could cure any virus.
All cancer.
But it killed 75% of the people that they gave it to.
Right. So, and a lot of telomere research, by the way, has to do with cancer because the telomeres in cancer cells have a lot of telomerase, and the telomerase prevents the telomeres from fraying, and that's why cancer cells are so hard to kill, is because they're protected. So that's pretty good science. And I asked about, so you guys are really, I mean, more than most shows, this show is really anchored in real, honest-to-goodness science. I mean, anyone who knows biology well or genetics or whatever, chemistry, biochemistry or physiology, if there are big, gigantic holes in it, people are going to know that.
But the characters, though. I mean, look at Billy Campbell. He's supposed to be this CDC scientist, but when he thinks somebody killed his friend, he goes out by himself. A military guy in the wilderness of America it's just, and his relationship with the younger assistant just seems so predictable and ridiculous.
Yeah. I wish that they had him on there.
So those are the things that drag it down for me. Those are what keeps it from realizing what it should be.
I wished they hadn't gone there, you know, having the mentor-mentee relationship. And that really,
Well, you know they're just setting it up for a triangle between him and her and Walker. I mean, that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. And I love science shows, and I love science shows that, you know, don't I love science shows that also have characters, you know, really good characters, but I don't like it when they start getting into cliche drama.
Yeah.
It was really funny. So the last thing that I had seen, because I don't watch all that much television. I do watch television, but I tend not to necessarily watch what everybody else is watching.
Mm-hmm.
But Billy Campbell, I mean, the last time I saw Billy Campbell was in The Rocketeer, which was...
Oh, you missed The Killing? That was such a good show.
Yeah, you know, I kind of go in and out of... Now I'm, like, really into TV. My husband is making me crazy. He's like, you really want to watch more TV? What about a good movie tonight? He said, I have to catch up
on Billy Campbell was really well used to The Killing. He wasn't the main character, but he was a main character.
Okay.
And it was... It was exactly what they should do with him.
Well, I completely did not recognize him from The Rocketeer. He was so young in that movie, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm like his age. He looked like he was so young. So I can't figure that out. Anyway, let's talk about another show. Should we talk about another show, or do you want to talk more about Helix?
No, it's okay. I feel like I've said pretty much what I wanted to say.
Okay. So Helix, watch it on Friday nights on Sci-Fi Channel. It's a really interesting show. It's got some good hard science in it, and based in good science. And it's different. You know, the storyline is different than what I expected it to be. So with a little bit of too much melodrama, perhaps. just sum it all up. So Almost Human just aired. I saw it sort of. I had one eye on TV while I was trying to get ready for the show. I was trying to prepare a clip from the Helix conference call today and trying to edit audio, like an hour of audio tape, and trying to watch Almost Human at the same time just didn't work. I had to do one or the other because I was botching up my audio file. Almost Human, I think, is really beginning to hit its stride. Don't you?
Mm-hmm. There's still cases of the week, which I could do without. But this case of the week, this week anyway, it was really, really interesting and opened up something science-y that, you know, it bared exploring. Plus, we had some really good character stuff with the lead, Kennick, and a little bit with the female detective, who we don't get to see a lot of.
Yeah. So what's her
story?
And
a little bit with the boss on a personal level.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely think so. I mean, I think this is really beginning to weave a good story. I think the science is really interesting on it. I think exploring... Where, again, it's a show that's exploring, not so, there's all the high tech and stuff like that, and the guy has Google Glass. You know, the internal affairs guy was wearing Google Glass, it looked like.
Yes, I noticed that. I thought the same thing.
So the technology, I mean, it's set in 2048. So it's not set so far in the future that the technology would be unbelievable for it being... You know, 30 years from now?
No, in fact, there's one piece of technology that it's kind of bugging me that seems behind the times in that they're still driving the cars themselves. I'm like, where are these self-driving cars that are already going to be, like, in the market soon?
Well, but maybe police departments are late adopters.
they usually are behind the technology curve. But it occurred to me during a certain scene in tonight's episode when Kinnix was driving. I'm like, why is he driving at all?
That's true. That's an interesting question. It's very interesting.
But other than that, the science is cool, and the characters are much more interesting in this than Helix. So I'm digging the characters, and if the story spreads a little bit outside of formula, I think it's only going to improve further.
Yeah, I think it is, now that they're sort of in the story. And I like the different kinds of, obviously it's what's changing. And the point that I was making was that it's not the engineering technology or the gadgetry technology that's advanced, but it is, with mapping of the human genome and with all of the research in genetics and medicine, that's where the cautionary tale is. That's where, science can get ahead of our ability to use it ethically, and where crime, where you have, and again, it's like Helix in that way, is you have medical science, which could be for the benefit of everybody, taken and exploited by people who want to do it for monetary gain and power, and not for the good of humankind. And that's really kind of like the science dilemma of the 21st century is going to be. And I think that's really interesting that you've got two shows, because a lot of it is about genetics. You have these androids like Dorian, with their synthetic soul. What is that about? That's gadgetry. But you also add this synthetic soul, and we don't know what that is. We don't know what kind of mix that is. It's not electronics because it's liquid. How does that make it? Is there a genetic component to androids like Dorian?
Well, yeah, as I feel like the genetic modification they're doing in humans for the upper class, of course, only, is also... Between that and the human-like robots, you're almost going to have a middle ground there where the two are coming together and
right.
What's acceptable and what's okay. And, yeah, it's –
right,
there's
and there's that
questions.
Gray line. And you have somebody like Kennex, who has a synthetic leg, mm-hmm. And I think that was one of the premises in doing a conference call at the beginning of the series, the name of the show being Almost Human – is you actually have Dorian and John being two sides of the same coin. Neither one of them is fully human. But I love the
and
idea.
And not just them.
There's
other characters in the show that
right,
the same thing
but
applies.
Starting from their point. And so you have these chromes who are genetically enhanced human beings. Mm-hmm. That was plunged in this. And I always think of Blade Runner, right? And the synthetic people in Blade Runner.
Did you check out that Hulu series I was talking about a couple of weeks ago?
I have not had a chance to do that yet.
It's also similar along the lines of genetic modification and a future. It's a little more dystopian, but it raises a few of the same issues, albeit not as deep because it's a short form series.
Sure. That's a very hot topic, and I'm like almost sad that I decided to explore that in my novel. Oh. But not realizing when I wrote it, when I started writing it a year ago, that was going to be like, the topic due 2014. So we'll see. Maybe it's a good thing. Who knows? On Almost Human, one of the things that the executive producers were very, very clear about, and J.J. Abrams was quite clear about, is they wanted the setting for Almost Human to not be quite as dystopian as, say, a Blade Runner.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted the future
there's some
to be
hopeful things in it.
Yeah, a little bit more positive, a little bit more hopeful. And not really as dark and bleak as Blade Runner, which was a really bleak.
We haven't gone over the wall yet, and it sounds
like
the wall might be where the dystopian exists.
Well, that's what I'm thinking, is that there's a whole other dystopian world on the other side of that wall. And there's only, you know, last week's episode explored that, and John LaRocquette's character, who is obviously coming back at some point this year, this season, because they haven't been yet assured a second season, and it's still sort of, you know, their numbers are much better, but is Fox going to be able to find a place for them? They have not gotten, they haven't gotten a back nine yet, as far as I know. So I am a little concerned because it's 13 episodes that they have contracted, and I don't know if they're getting a back nine or if they're coming back next year. I'm
at the moment, it's not looking positive for them.
No, and the fact that their PR person, because we had planned on doing interviews, one-on-ones with the cast. He's not. I kind of tickled him, sent him a, you know, a note saying, I poked him a little bit and said, hey, you know, it's circling around. We were going to be doing this, and now the show's back on the air. And I haven't heard back from him. So, and that was like a week ago. So that's never a good sign.
It's too bad because I really like the show. And compared to most shows on the air, I think it's really interesting and different. And I'm going to be very sad when it gets canceled after 13 episodes. It will not at all be explored to its fullest extent.
I know. I get bummed when that happens. And see, that's one of the reasons I stopped watching TV a lot. I used to be a complete addict. I would sit and I would watch TV hour upon hour upon hour upon hour because shows were given a chance. And now rarely does a show get a chance. I mean,
I'd say this season they've let things play out a bit further. I mean, maybe they won't give it past the 13, but they'll give it the 13.
Yeah. I mean, and I think Fox has done that. They haven't just said, okay, we're going to end the show. And I think the numbers have gotten better. And I think if they give it a chance to find an audience, because it is a different show. I mean, it's a different kind of show for a network, for a not cable network.
Do you follow the cancellation bear on Twitter?
No, I tend to follow TV by the numbers.
So I feel like some of the things you're saying, the cancellation bear would put on their fan excuse bingo card. Every time that, you know, somebody's like, well, if it only had a better time slot, or if it only get a chance. And every time somebody says that to one of their tweets, they always respond back to fan excuse bingo. And they actually worked up a bingo card that has all the common complaints.
That's really funny. I find it Fox has been better than most networks about giving shows a chance.
Now, after they screwed over Joss Whedon all those years ago and angered all his fans.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, things like the X-Files, like years and years ago, even House, you know, they gave the show a chance. Its first half season, nobody watched it. And then they gave it the spot right after American Idol, and it took off. But, you know, so they've given shows a chance. Sci-fi has not been so kind, so they want their, you know, 3 million viewers a week. And I think one of the shows that got caught in the crossfire with that was Stargate Universe.
Some of their really well-respected shows, they'll pull after 4 or 5 seasons. I mean, look at Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
Warehouse 13 was a huge hit for them, and they're yanking it. It hasn't been on the air that long.
Yeah, well, their criteria is like, okay, they want 3 million viewers a week. And,
but that's not realistic for them.
No,
no. Unless they get a Walking Dead equivalent.
Right. And you know, one of the things that I know I was watching, you know, kind of the numbers with Stargate Universe, was that it dipped briefly below 2 million viewers a week. And they said, no, we're not bringing it back. And even though its numbers went up as season 2 went on, they was like, no, we've made this decision. We're not going to have it. And then I thought that was really unfortunate because I think that's – and there's a whole movement. I've been tagged on their Facebook page. It's the Save Stargate Universe movement, and they're trying to get it picked up on Netflix, which I'm not sure is likely to happen.
No, that's a very low one shot.
I mean, I think a lot of them have gone on to other stuff, and even though the end of the series you know, gave them a 3-year timeline before they were going to come out of their stasis pods. And we're not there yet. we're getting there, but we're not there yet quite. To that 2014 would be the year they would be coming out of their stasis pods. And I don't think that's going to happen. Although they could be traveling for longer. I don't think they would get Robert Carlyle to do another series of the show because he's got other stuff going on, not the least of which is Once Upon a Time. But even without that, I think he's got other stuff that's going on. And without him, I think the show kind of falls apart since he was the main character in the show. And so I don't know. I mean, I think a lot of those guys have gone to do other things or to appear on other people's TV shows. I don't know. The people who produced the Stargate franchise really do have hopes. And in fact, when I asked Joe Malazzi last year, you know, hey, why don't you guys like do a comic book or something to close, you know, to close the loop on the show, because they actually have a script and everything. It was like, well, we really, you know, they really want to do a movie or something to give it a finish. So who knows? It could happen. But it's unlikely to go over to Netflix. So they do have that as a hope at some point. And that was a direct question I asked. So who knows? Let's see, what else? Black Sails. Have you been watching Black Sails?
Still just the first one. I was trying to make a concerted effort this weekend to catch up on the shows I knew you'd want to talk about, but I just didn't get to that one.
So it's a...
And Almost Human caught up, so maybe Black Sails will be next week.
Okay, so that's good. Because there aren't that many episodes, there are only 3.
Right, yeah, there's 2, and they're sitting on my TiVo, so... That I haven't watched. I mean,
there are 3. Okay, so there are 3, and there's the 4th episode airs Saturday night,
right.
And it is it's really enjoyable. Actually, it's getting more enjoyable as the crosses and double crosses and triple crosses are going on between the pirates of the island and the competing captains. What I really like about the show is it really subverts everything that we think of when we think of pirates. You know, yo-ho-ho in a bottle of rum. There's enough of that, but there's a lot of politics. I mean, this is a very political show.
Huh.
And you have politics going on between the captains of the pirate vessels and the guy who is the sort of merchant, you know, the mercantile guy who's kind of his goods are based on what the pirates bring in, and his daughter, who sort of runs the island, and all of the different people who have an impact. And it's a really, really well done series, and I'm really, really enjoying it a lot.
Yeah, I thought the first episode was great. It was definitely the best thing I've seen on Stars in a while, and
yeah,
I do look forward to watching more. I'm excited to watch more.
Yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to that. And did you see this week's True Detective?
No, I'm behind on that a little bit too, but not too.
It was weird. Oh, what a weird episode!
Ooh.
It was a really strange episode.
Oh, that show is really, really good. That was my favorite pilot this year so far.
It is, speaking of pilots, did you know it's pilot season at Amazon.com?
Yeah, I heard there were some new ones up. I haven't had a chance to check them out yet.
Yeah, there are a bunch of them. In fact, let's take that opportunity to look, and I haven't watched any of them because I just found them yesterday.
Yeah, they put them up last week.
Okay.
So that was going to be my assignment this week, is to try to review some of those.
Okay, so let's take a look and see what they have, because there's a bunch of them, and they look Amazon pilot season. See them all for free. So there are kids pilots. There are five kids pilots.
The kids stuff last. I tried to watch some of the kids stuff last year, and I wasn't into it. But most of their sitcom pilots were good last year.
So there are five comedy and drama pilots. So the
Ooh,
first
drama ones now.
Yeah. So the first
one
is
called...
They
didn't have any dramas last year.
Bosch. The first one's called Bosch. And a homicide detective works to solve the murder of a boy while standing trial for the murder of a serial killer.
Whoa.
That looks kind of interesting.
Okay. The
and
first
it starts...
I was like, again, but then the second part.
It's based on Michael Connelly's best-selling book series. The Bosch Detectives, starring Titus Welliver.
I like him.
Yeah, it looks really, really good. So that's one. Then there's one called Mozart in the Jungle. And Mozart in the Jungle is sex, drugs, and classical music. What happens behind the curtains of the symphony can be just as captivating as what happens on stage. Created by Paul Weitz, who did About a Boy, Roman Coppola from the Darjeeling Limited, Jason Schwartzman from Moonrise Kingdom, and Alex Timbers. We'd love to know. Okay, so that's who it stars. So that's that. And then there's The Rebels. And The Rebels, this is an Amazon original pilot, Natalie Z. is over her head when her husband suddenly dies, leaving her as the sole owner of the LA Rebels, a pro football team. And these are it's a half hour show. And then there is Transparent, which is a half hour show, created by Jill Soloway from 6 Feet Under and the United States of Tara. An LA family with serious boundary issues have their past and future unravel when a dramatic admission causes everyone's secrets to spill out. And do I see Jeff Tambor? Is that, doesn't say who it stars, but it kind of looks like him.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah, Jeff Tambor. Yes, ha. Yes, that was Jeff Tambor. And then there's a series called The After. And these are this is an hour-long series from Chris Carter.
Ooh.
Yeah. 8 strangers are thrown together by mysterious forces and must help each other survive in a violent world that defies explanation, starring Aldous Hodge and Andrew Howard. And that is a 60-minute, and the series Bosch, I didn't tell you how long that was. That is an hour drama, and Mozart Jungle is a half hour, so I'm guessing that's a comedy. And The Rebels.
Or a dramedy.
Or a dramedy. And The Rebels is also half an hour. So they all look really interesting.
Amazon takes some chances. At least last year, none of their pilots were predictable, run-of-the-mill, formulaic things. They were all really interesting and different.
So what did you like of last year's Amazon pilots?
I really liked Alpha House, which obviously we got ordered the series.
Okay, so we have to talk about Alpha House after you tell me the rest.
Okay. And I liked Betas a lot, which also got picked up to series, but I haven't had a chance to watch it past the pilot. I watched Alpha House, the whole thing, but I didn't pick up Betas yet. And what else? There was a musical one that I thought was pretty nifty, but I like musicals, with original music and everything, and B.B. Newworth was in it.
Okay.
No, I don't know. Yeah, I'm trying to remember. You know, well, and she's Broadway, too. So, you know,
of course.
She
yeah.
had a whole song with surrounding the F word, and of course it wasn't censored on Amazon in the pilot. Now I'm racking my brain and trying to remember. But I remember liking all of them. There was only one or two that I was like, not so good.
So, Alphas. I'm sorry, Alpha House, mm-hmm. not Alphas. Alpha House.
No, Alphas was canceled.
Alphas was canceled. Love David Strathairn. Was not so excited about the show. I watched it for a couple of seasons, and it just the best thing mm-hmm. about Alphas was getting to interview David Strathairn at Comic-Con. So, who is a really, really interesting interview. I adore him. I think he's like one of my favorite American actors. Because he's always so interesting. Loved him in Lincoln. So Alpha House, starring John Goodman, with a surprise appearance by Bill Murray in the first and in the last episode. And a really great cast in general. What did you, so tell me what you liked about the show. You watched it all the way through, as did
I. I was really surprised that the main characters were Republicans, given Gary Trudeau's comic in
yes.
Democrats, but maybe he wanted to try the other side of the aisle. What I liked about it is the characters weren't one thing. Like, yes, you have these stereotypes they set up and these easy punchlines that they set up, but then they also take them in unexpected directions.
Yeah.
And they had a really good reoccurring cast of really strong comic actors as well. So you came
yeah.
up with this really fleshed out world of all these different interesting oddballs.
Well, I agree with you. I think what I thought was really interesting was, and I can actually see Gary Trudeau having a bunch of Republicans living on, C Street and, which they do. There's a whole group of Republican representatives who are senators or whatever that live together and there were allegations a few years ago that house is bought lock, stock and barrel by lobbyists. So I thought this was going to be like really skewering the Republicans. And at first it almost seems like that, but the characters go on, who they're really, really hitting on is the radical wing of the Republican Party.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
what I really loved was how each of these characters kind of on their own and in their own way ran up against that extreme right wing of the Republican Party and how they handled it. Because it was like, wait a second, why can't we be for something? Why do we only have to be no? I just thought it was really, really well done that they were really not cookie cutter characters. None of them
were.
No,
they made you think. There were things that, I think some politicians in Washington should watch it right now and learn a few lessons.
I agree.
I mean, they really showed a mirror on some of the issues going on there.
Oh, yeah. And I thought it was really well done. And I love the idea at the end, John Goodman's character makes a really, really interesting choice at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
yeah.
it's a really, I think they all do. And I think they all come around to learning a little bit more about themselves and find themselves in the same place, excuse me, that a lot of Republican politicians find themselves in, kind of scratching their heads. And saying, well, wait a second, that's not who we are as Republicans. How did someone come and, usurp the party? You are speaking to someone who is not, I'm not a Republican. I just don't get why, Republicans allow themselves to be co-opted the way they have been the last couple of years. But this isn't a politics show. But I really, really, highly, highly recommend Alpha House. I don't watch that many comedies. Alpha House just really, I found it very enjoyable. And now you can binge watch it because all the episodes are up.
It wasn't a fluffy comedy, though. It was a comedy with substance.
Yeah, it was.
What kind of sets it apart from some other.
Yeah, I really try to watch comedies. And I just like, this is just so stupid. Everybody keeps wanting to get me to watch The Big Bang Theory, and I keep watching it. I'll watch an episode and think, okay. And I'm like, wow, this was really stupid. This was so stereotyped. why, you know, and I, you know, our whole family are a bunch of science geeks. It's like, oh, I feel like we've just been, you know, stereotyped to death. And it's like, no, it's really good. You should watch it. Maybe you just watched an off episode, and I'll watch another episode, and it's just as stereotyped. And I just don't like stereotypes.
I think it's funny. I just don't think it's, you know, that novel of a show.
No, it's not. It's stereotypes and more stereotypes. I mean, I kind of come from the 80s comedies, and that were a lot of them had, they weren't silly for, I mean, there's, they all had substance, or many of them had, not all of them, but many of them had substance. And you know, it's, I just don't watch a lot of comedy now, but Alpha House is really funny. What else? So recommend to me a comedy series that you think I'll like, Jimmy.
Oh, but that you would like? See, that's what's hard, is I know you're not a comedy fan, so I can tell you what my favorite comedies are, but I don't know if you'll
agree. So hold on. I will tell you the kind of comedy that I watch.
Okay, go for it.
Or used to watch when I watched comedy, because I don't watch comedy much.
Yeah.
I love The Simpsons.
Okay.
We big Simpsons watchers in our house. It was sort of must-see TV. But back in the day, Cheers, Taxi, Barney Miller, Night Court, WKRP in Cincinnati, you know, going back further than that, I mean, MASH, you know, chapter and verse. I could probably quote back to you every line of the Dick Van Dyke Show that was ever on the air. And I was little girl, so I didn't, most of them I didn't see when I was like the age. I saw them mostly in reruns. But yeah, so that's the kind of comedy I like.
Well, so they don't make a certain type of comedy anymore. Like, you're not going to find anything like the Dick Van Dyke Show. They make family comedy still, but they're not the same. They're not, they don't have that spark to them, I guess.
And it was not just a family comedy. It was also a work comedy. It was half family comedy, half office comedy about the entertainment. I mean, it was the 30 Rock of its day.
Right. 30 Rock was great. Did you like 30 Rock?
I liked 30 Rock. Yes, I did.
Okay. You might like Community, maybe.
Okay.
It started out kind of dumb, but midway through the first season, it really picked up. And it became this really subversive, interesting show in which they would, like, toss in time travel or alternate realities or have a three-part giant paintball war that spoofed war movies. But it's really funny, and it's got different things that aren't your typical that you're not going to find on any other show on the air.
Okay.
That's my favorite currently running sitcom, I think. I really liked Arrested Development in its day. With
okay.
its oddball characters, but they were more mean-spirited, whereas Community's not mean-spirited.
Now, I watched a lot of Arrested Development. I thought it was really smartly written. Almost a little too smart and self-aware. And, you know, but other than that sort of, we know we're really smart. We're really smart comedy writers. And that kind of self-awareness.
Did you ever watch Sports Night?
You know, I did not.
That is
an excellent
show. I mean, it got pulled after two seasons and there's no ending to it. But if you, I know you like Sorkin. You might want to check it out.
I do.
It's really good.
I love Sorkin. And, you know, speaking of Sorkin, I can't wait until Newsnight comes back on.
I know.
The Newsroom.
Yeah, I feel like Sports Night was him working out his what his writing was going to be before he did Westwing. And then, you know, obviously took it a step further. But it still holds up really well. And I hate sports. I could care less about sports. And I really love Sports Night. And by the time the pilot was over, they had me caring about something in sports because it's that well written and that well developed.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, it didn't make me a sports fan, but, you know.
So, being completely random here and stream of consciousness, I just saw I've got the TV on mute, and a picture of Paul McCartney just came up on TV. We cannot pass this show without honoring the 50th anniversary of the Beatles.
Who are the Beatles?
Hmm?
Is that one of those old bands?
The Beatles? Yeah, one of those old bands. Yeah.
One of those old bands that people like?
One of those bands of old people. Yeah, no. Yes, one of those old bands that people like. I was 9 years old when, now you know how old I am.
59.
I was 9 years old, and see, this is like the youth culture, right? Everyone's young now, and it's like us baby boomers are like these old people, but this is one thing that we have as a shared experience that you young folks don't have any idea what it was like. I was 9 years old, and the Ed Sullivan Show was on Sunday nights. See, in our house, it was either salami omelets or pancakes for dinner on Sunday nights. Early dinner, always early dinner, so that at 6 o'clock we could watch Wonderful World of Color, because we were little kids. My sister was even younger. And then at 7 o'clock was the Ed Sullivan Show, which sometimes we watched and sometimes we didn't. So, and then, of course, there was the annual Wizard of Oz on Sunday night, which, you know, annual. I can't remember what channel it was on, but it was, like, a big deal. And eventually, when we got a color TV, it was really cool. Anyway, so back in 1964, watched the Beatles, and I had heard a song of theirs, and I was like, gotta watch the Beatles. It was an amazing experience, because the next day, or immediately after the show was over, the scene in Bye Bye Birdie, where everybody's on the phone, it's like, did you hear, it was like such a shared experience. And I remember it. And I remember watching them, and on the screen flashing when John Lennon's close-up came. Sorry, girls, he's married. Because he was the only married Beatle. So that had to mention that, because that people have been talking about it all week. And it was really, you know, it was one of those shared American experiences. You know, it was like the Kennedy assassination in those 4 days of watching television. That was a shared experience. That last episode of The Fugitive, which in Chicago, we had a power outage that night because there was a bad storm, which, you know, another shared experience in the history of television. So, you know, there are the final episode of Cheers. So there are those moments where we, you know, there were those bonding moments. But the Beatles, couldn't not mention that. So I'm going to check out some of your comedy shows that you're suggesting.
Well, and another show you should be watching, and I know you started it at some point, but it's my favorite show that I absolutely love, and it came back last night, is The Walking Dead.
Yes, right. The Walking Dead is back.
It beat the Olympics last night in viewers. It's the most watched show on. Yeah, the ratings are still huge. It's watched more than anything, really, on the NFL. But the last night's mid-season premiere, because they ended, you know, after this huge battle in the winter where the cast was split up after several main characters died again, and everybody splintered off and went their separate ways as they kind of fled for their lives. And this first episode back only had three main characters in it. It was basically a story of a character study of two different characters. And then there was a third one who was kind of involved but spent half the episode unconscious. So he wasn't as big. And it was really, really interesting. They got into some stuff from the past. They got into a character's head that was going to give up on life because she couldn't take losing people anymore and was making a conscious decision not to try to meet up with everybody else, to go off on her own,
mm-hmm.
but then had to get an idea of what life was going to be like on her own and thought better of it. And then there was a very coming-of-age story for this kid who's gotten a little bit too big for his britches, and him and his dad are fighting, sort of like a typical teenager father fight, but, you know, a little bit, it was higher stakes, obviously.
Sure.
And they really had a really good step for him on, yes, his father starts to see him as an adult, but in some ways he still wants his father in his life and still wants to be that kid. And the best part was it had a happy ending, because almost no Walking Dead episodes have a happy ending. So it was really cool to finally get one.
Oh, cool. Very good. Very good. I have to mention that Hannibal is coming back as soon as the Olympics have concluded.
Seen the screeners go up for it yet, though.
No, I haven't either.
They've been posting some other screeners on that press site, but not Hannibal yet.
No, I haven't seen Hannibal yet either. So I'm looking forward to that. You know, it used to be anything that came out in February would be in a screener, and I haven't seen a lot of February episodes.
Yeah, NBC put out their new sitcoms. That's the only thing I've seen go from the Big Four recently.
Yeah. So Katie says they have done screenings for the press, and I'm guessing that would be in L.A.,
probably.
And
those of us that don't live in L.A.
Yeah, I get invited. And they probably did screening at TCA, which I'm not a member of. And that was in L.A. And, you know, I get invited to so many screenings. And they're all in L.A. And it's like I get three or four a day.
Sometimes they're in New York.
Occasionally they're in New York, and occasionally for movies, they now will give you a private Vimeo viewing. TCA, that's what Katie says. Yeah, they did one at TCA, yes, and I'm not a member. Although, if I wanted to go down to TCA, I actually had invitations from specific networks to come down and chat. I got an email from contact at HBO saying, hey, are you here at TCA? Come on down. If you're not, you know, we'll get you passes and stuff. But I can only afford the time and money to go to LA once a year, and that's for Comic-Con, which isn't in LA, it's in San Diego, but you know, you get the idea. And Comic-Con is the big one for me. So because all the genre stuff is there, and it's not just TV. It's movies and TV and books and all of pop culture. So I am going to be back at Comic-Con this year, so I'm very excited about that. TCA needs a Chicago branch. Yes, they do. And unfortunately, that's what Katie said, unfortunately there are very few entertainment writers that are based in Chicago. And those who are based in Chicago tend to work for the big dailies or the big radio stations or TV stations, and they have budgets that let them go to LA when they want to.
If they're going to do another branch of the TCA, I would think Seattle would be apparently the place to do it.
You think? Well, a lot of shows are
just
shot
because it seems like there's lots of TV writers in Seattle.
There are all over the place.
Yeah. It'd be nice to have something near Columbus, just one.
Something in the Midwest. I mean, it was nice that HBO did a thing for Game of Thrones last year in Chicago. It was like, yay! So that was kind of nice. Hopefully they're going to do that again. And Game of Thrones is coming back soon enough.
I think it's April 6th. HBO ran a preview last night of it.
They did. And they interviewed some of the actors, and looks very, very good. And I'm curious to see where they're going to go. And from what I understand, it's really kicking into a very active storyline right from the get-go.
Yes. Oh, yeah. There's some major things in the books that occur just after where it left off that will be dealt with this season for sure.
Yeah. I know. And I have to catch up on the books and get myself to that point. And, of course, Once Upon a Time comes back in March.
Mm-hmm.
In less than a month now, I think.
Yep. I'm just glad that Once Upon a Time's not on right now, because I do next morning reviews for C42F for Walking Dead and Once Upon a Time, and when they both air at the same time, it's a challenge to try to get both of them written before I go to work in the morning.
I know, and I do too, and I do next morning or same day reviews of Once Upon a Time on Blog Critics, and you know, with all of the TV that's on right now, it's actually nice to have that airy time to write about other shows. And some of my fans are like, "Well, you know, you should be writing about Once Upon a Time every week still," and I'm like, I've got so many other things to write about right now, in addition to running Blog Critics. I just don't have the time. And as much as I like Once Upon a Time, which I do, I do. You're surprised.
Really? You like Once Upon a Time?
Oh, haha, you're just joking. You're joshing me.
Joshing you.
You are joshing me. Okay, yes, I love Once Upon a Time. And I am looking forward to it coming back, and I am looking forward to particularly seeing what happens to one certain character who will be back in some guise or another. And there was an interesting interview with Adam and Eddie on the Once Upon a Fan site, the UK site, which I invite you to go take a look at, where they, you know, tell nothing at all, but tease a little bit. I mean, that's, you know, it's funny because during the season, one of the things that, and I used to do a lot more interviews with showrunners, but they don't tell you anything.
Mm-hmm.
So they really can't. And so that gets kind of, okay, so what do I write about? But so I haven't done one with them. I'm going to see if I can set something up when we get closer to the premiere date. But I'm also trying to set up interviews with lots of other things. So there's a lot to cover, and I am looking forward to Once Upon a Time coming back, and how they're going to explore. I'm really excited that Cora's coming back.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to see more of her. We're going to see Belle's story, which will be really interesting, a little bit more of an exploration of that. Of course, we have the Wicked Witch. We have Rapunzel, the Wicked Witch of the West. We have Rapunzel and all kinds of new characters, which I'm always a little nervous about when Once Upon a Time introduces new characters, because that constant expansion of the cast tends to make the storylines not as meaty for the main cast.
Yes, but I'm excited about Robin Hood because I think it's going to play into Tina's.
Well, but that's different. That's completely different. It's why I didn't object to Belle, because her character expands on and allows the character of Rumpelstiltskin to be further explored than he otherwise would be. And just as I think Robin Hood will really add depth to Regina. And I think that the character needs it.
Yeah.
Really a lot, because she's very two-dimensional right now. And she's a great actress. I really like Lana Perea in the role. And I really want her to have something meaty to work with. So yes, that's one new character. See, that's the thing. I like when they add new characters that connect with one of the characters we already know.
like when we did Pan, and he connected with multiple
exactly.
characters.
So I didn't mind Pan. In fact, I thought that was a brilliant storyline, and I was thrilled and delighted, being a Rumpel fan, that we really got to see his story arc play out. I mean, where they go with him from now, for now, it's going to have to be in a completely different direction, because his story arc has played out.
Yeah.
We know his story. We know the source of his angst and his conflict, and that he in the end sacrificed himself for the good of other people. So his tale is a lot complete. So where they go with him will be interesting. But I really, really loved the Peter Pan story, for where it went with all the characters, but especially where it went with Rumpel. So, but the other characters they're introducing, like Rapunzel, and, you know, maybe those will be one-offs?
Maybe. I hate when they do one-offs, though. I do. I just don't enjoy it, because it's like they don't give you time to get to know the person, and you just, I don't know. It annoys me when they bring in a character and then don't really do much with them, like Cinderella.
Like the Little Mermaid, Cinderella.
Little
Cinderella
Mermaid,
would be great
right.
to have back. But Jesse
yep.
Schramm, of course, is so busy with other stuff, although not as much.
Yeah, How I Met Your Mother did a episode last week where they brought back most of the major girlfriends of Ted to kind of, because this is the final season, they're ready to wrap it up. And Jennifer Morrison was like the glaring absence, and I guess that's the Once Upon a Time thing, that they just couldn't get her.
Right. Well, speaking of characters who are involved in other things, there's, of course, Megan Ory, who is doing the series Intelligence. So have you watched that?
I watched the first episode. I was kind of waiting to see if it was going to get canceled before I committed any more time to it. And it's looking pretty likely that it's going to get canceled. So
yeah.
The good thing with that is at least we'll have Red back on Once Upon a Time, hopefully, next year.
Well, you know, this is the thing. When I wrote my year preview, like at the very beginning of the year, like back in September, I think the show that I was most looking forward to, one of the shows I was most looking forward to, was Intelligence. And it is disappointing to me. I like it, it's gotten better as the weeks have gone along, I think. But it's still, I think Josh Holloway is really wooden in this role.
I think that's
deadly. It's a really emotional story. Here's this guy. He was betrayed by his wife. And he sees visions of her. He's falling apart. And he's a very stoic character, but there's a difference between stoic and wooden. And there's all this turmoil going on. And I think Megan Ory is doing great. She's got a real badass character. I really like her. But it's very cookie cutter. And I'm just not... I'm liking it better than I did after the pilot, and I'm not completely caught up. I think I've seen the first three episodes only, so I have to still catch up on that. And then the last show I want to talk about is, and then we'll call it a night, because you've been very kind. I know this is past your bedtime.
Yeah, I'm starting to fall asleep over here.
Yeah, is Rake.
I am caught up on that. I've been watching it week to week.
So what do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I like Greg Kinnear a lot still. I still enjoy his performance. But I still feel like the show isn't doing enough that's outside of the case.
It's not clicking.
Stuff.
Something's not clicking.
Yeah.
He is just such an unlikable character. It's really hard to see how he gets by on his charm.
Yeah, like he does some things where you're just like, I like Greg Kinnear a lot, but that doesn't mean I like the character.
Yeah, I don't like the character. And if you don't, see the thing about, and again, people keep talking about it's like House if he was a if he was a lawyer, and it's not because House cared about the medicine. He had an ethical code, and whatever he did in his personal life, he was self-destructive and he was a jerk. And he had more turmoil in his personal life. But when it came to the medicine, no one was more important than his patient. Everything stopped for him to deal with the patient. And he was not distractible from the medicine, at least not for very long. So that's a huge difference, I think. And Hugh Laurie, I mean, House was not charming. There wasn't anything about House that was charming. He was really, really charismatic, magnetic in a way, but he wasn't out to charm anyone. So he would occasionally use it, but he wasn't an outright charming character. There was so much more depth written into that character. I mean, I think David Shore created a brilliant, iconic character in House. I don't think Rake is even in the same ballpark or the same league. I don't see a future for it.
I think it's going to get canceled here too.
Yeah, I haven't seen the ratings, but I'm not digging it. There's just stuff that's just stupid. I mean, he'll do something, and we're just like, I'll look at my husband and say, what? What did he just do? Why would he do that? And he would say, I don't know. TV by the Numbers has it down as will probably be canceled, Katie says. Yeah. And I would not disagree with that. Yeah. See, now take it off and guarantee that Almost Human gets more episodes.
I don't see it happen. I it's really sad, but and I don't think it's an either or situation.
No, in that it's case. Not. It's not. There would be room in the schedule.
There would be, but you know.
You know, this is one of the reasons I stopped watching TV. I stopped watching TV for a couple of years, and it's because shows that were good shows that I would get emotionally invested in were canceled after a half a dozen episodes or a season or a shortened season. And it makes it very hard, you know, or they would take the show and they would put it into some deep hole of a scheduling place where you couldn't find it or keep changing it. And I finally got to the point where I was like, okay, yes, that is true. That is why God made TiVo. But I just got to a point where I'm like, and I don't like to watch things on TiVo. I tend to like to watch things when they're on real time so that if I'm going to write about a show, I can write about it right away. If I have a screener.
Whatever I'm going to write about, I try to watch that night, but I'm not going to watch it live because I don't want to watch commercials. So I at least wait. Like Walking Dead, I always watch when it airs, but I wait, you know, 15 minutes in.
See, now what I do is I will watch and then I write during the commercials.
Yeah, I just can't do commercials. And I don't like writing in those two-minute bursts. So I'd rather sit down and do a whole stream of consciousness thing. I've tried writing before, like, before the episode's complete, and I just find I need that look at the whole picture to really structure what I want to write.
Oh, I don't write. I take notes. And so I'll take my notes, and then I'll use the, like, I'll say, oh, that was interesting, blah, blah, blah happened. I wonder what's going to happen with that. And then I'll take those and string them together after the show airs. And that's people ask, how did you get that episode review up so quickly? Now you know my secret. Sometimes it's because I have a screener and I've already seen the episode. But often it is because I am taking extensive notes when it is commercial break. And the longer the commercial breaks, you know, sometimes it's easier to write, or I'll get a tweet out or something. But that also breaks breaks concentration on watching something. And I think that most affects me when I am watching a show that has me holding my breath between the, in the commercials. So I haven't watched anything like that recently. So I think there was one episode of Once Upon a Time where that happened, or two episodes of Once Upon a Time that happened, where I was like, literally, oh, I just like, I'm fast forwarding because I was watching it on DVR, and I'm fast forwarding. I'm like, oh, I got to get through this because I have to see the what happens next. But that doesn't happen very often. Mm-hmm. And but it does tend to break concentration if you're writing while the commercials are on, but not always. Well, we managed to kill like almost 90 minutes. I'm impressed. Mm-hmm. And you sound like you're half asleep. So, yeah. So I want to thank you for coming by. I don't know what happened to Chrissy. I hope she's feeling better. She had pneumonia, which is why she didn't make last week's show. And I hope she's feeling better, poor thing. Just a reminder, where do they find you, Jimmy?
JeromeWetzel.com links to everything. That's the easiest place to look.
That is a great idea, and you can find me at blogcritics.org. You can find me at barbarabarnett.com, where you'll find a link to Let's Talk TV, which is my TV blog. Remember, if you are a House fan and you haven't picked up a copy yet, please do pick up a copy of Chasing Zebras, The Unofficial Guide to House MD, which is available at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Barbara's Books, Powell's, pretty much everywhere books are sold.
Let's pick up a few dozen copies so we can finally get the follow-up for the later seasons.
Yeah, buy lots of copies, because I'm not going to write a sequel unless we sell lots more copies. So, and my publisher comes and tries to bash down my door and says, we need you to, we're out of copies and we want to, we need to redo the book. And can you write an updated version of it that covers all 8 seasons?
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way that's going to happen. I was going to write a Kindle single that covered the last 2 seasons only. And I am so busy trying to, you know, write a novel and write now a new novel and all the stuff with Blog Critics and everything else. I just don't have time unless I have a contract to do a new book. It's just not going to happen. So buy the book, tell your friends. The more books we sell, more books you buy, the better chance there will be. I'm not bribing or anything, but the better chance, truly and honestly, the better chance there will be that there will be a sequel that will cover the entire series. Everything will be rewritten in light in 2020 hindsight. So it'll be a completely new edition, but only if the current edition sells out, which it's not quite there yet. So thank you for coming on board tonight, Jimmy, and talking with me. We covered a lot of ground. We did. We covered a ton of ground. Mm-hmm. Thank you for listening, and tell your friends about the show. And if there's anything you want us to talk about, any particular show, actor, whatever, let me know. And we'll see you next Monday on Let's Talk TV Live. Bye-bye, everyone. Good night, Jimmy.
Night.